I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Indeed, yes. Big thanks for sure. Hey, Sean and Seth, Gary and Schulenberg with you on this early Memorial Day morning. Thanks for going live today. You're welcome. If you're up with us, text us, 713-572-4610. We appreciate you getting up with us today. We got a lot to get to on the show, 713-572-4610. So we talked, Seth, about this trade or potential trade last week. If you missed it, the New England Patriots are doing at their own version of kind of what the Texans did with Iron Sharpens Iron, like an internal documentary that gives you just this immersive experience of the hire of Mike Vrabel, the draft process, signing free agents, the war room on draft day. And it was quite clear in their documentary that there were a couple teams trying to trade up to the 38th overall pick in the draft. That was the Patriots' second round pick. And one of those teams was the Houston Texans. And you could tell just from the conversation, it was the Texans and the Bears that were trying to move up to 38. The Bears were at 39. They were trying to move up one spot. The Texans are trying to move up 20 spots from 58 to 38. And they were offering a couple of third round picks, one this year and one next year, to do that. Ultimately, the deal didn't come together. We were speculating last week as to who the Texans might have been targeting with that pick, or with that trade, I should say, because the Patriots ended up taking Trevion Henderson, the running back out of Ohio State. Very good player. Jonathan Alexander pulled the curtain back on this, Seth. You and I, it was kind of a fun segment because we were just sort of speculating about what if they were trying to trade up to get Trevion Henderson? What would that have looked
right.
like?
We know, yeah, all the guys that were there that were no longer there. Yeah, how in the 10 spots between the Patriots pick there and then when the Texans ultimately drafted Ursary, who were the potential guys that maybe they were targeting?
Yeah, yeah. They traded a third round pick to move up 10 spots to 48 from 58 to take Arriante Ursary. Jonathan Alexander pulled the curtain back in his article. He had a long article about Ursary this week, and it's really good. Just it tells his whole background and his story into football, and it's very compelling. He said this, Seth: the Texans, who brought Ursary in for a top 30 visit during the draft process, liked him so much, they actually tried to trade up from 58 to 38 with the New England Patriots to get him. Two sources with knowledge of the Texans draft process told the Chronicle. As a projected late first round, early second round pick, the Texans front office thought there was a chance someone could take him early in the second round. So they had already moved back from the first into the early second, taking Jaden Higgins at 34.
Yeah.
Then when 38 is sitting there, they're on the phone with the Patriots trying to move up to get Ursary. Sometimes the best trades are the ones you don't make. They only ended up having to give up one third round pick to move up 10 spots to get him several minutes later.
So they save a third round pick, and you could look at this as either the optimist or the pessimist. The optimist would say, hey, they got the guy they wanted anyway, and it didn't end up costing as much as they would have spent. But you could also immediately say, what the hell were they even thinking? What were the hell they even thinking trying to get up to 38 to get a guy that was going to be there at 48?
Yeah, it's a guessing game, man.
I know, yeah, it's a complete. I tend to be more on the optimist side of things when I very much give teams excuses because it is all such a crapshoot in so many ways that there's no guarantee that he would have been there 10 spots later. So that worked out. It does make me feel better in that, okay, there's a guy they felt really good about. Mm-hmm. That, and, you know, maybe they're maybe they believe, maybe they have a higher assessment on him than a lot of other teams. But that's where we get to watch over the next couple years.
Yeah.
Maybe this year. Hopefully. We'll see. Ursary, rookie of the year. There you go.
That would be sweet.
That washes away everything that happened with Kenyon Green. Those were some trade day. You know, you wonder, okay, what might have been if a trade had or had not worked out.
Yeah.
If a few years ago, if they didn't have a good offer to move back, would they have taken Kenyon Green or Kyle Hamilton?
Right.
With that selection? I don't know.
Yeah. Tough to think about. I think the other thing with this trade is that the pick they ended up trading to the Raiders, because they Raiders had 48. That's who they traded with to move up to get Ursary.
Yeah.
The third round pick they actually gave up to move up there was one that was in the 90s somewhere. It wasn't the 79th overall pick that they were going to give up in this draft with the Patriots trade. The Patriots trade, they would have been moving up 20 spots. They would have been giving up 79 and a third next year. The 79th pick was the pick they used to get Jalen Knoll, who has been, you know, again, he hasn't played a single snap in the NFL yet, so I'm not going to get too out over my skis over this, but he has been widely lauded as the best pick they had in this draft in terms of where they got him and what his talent level is. There's sort of a Tank Dell feel to it where this guy, you know, he's the measurables aren't there, but we know the talent is there.
Yeah.
And he definitely fills a role, and he can play on special teams too for returning punts and stuff like that. I'm not going to say Jalen Knoll wouldn't have been on the team if they'd made that deal with the Patriots. Maybe they moved back up. You know, they still would have had another couple third round picks to play with there, you know, to move up and potentially get him. But you know, they have him now, like, for sure. Like, that was the pick. You would have given up the pick that you used to get Jalen Knoll. If you were going to still try to get Jalen Knoll on this team, you would have had some work to do. You would have needed two to tango to get him on this team.
Yeah, and I guess theoretically, the other interesting part of it would have been, let's say if it wasn't actually Ursary they were going after, Luther Burden III was still there. He went, you know, he ended up going 39th.
Yeah.
I mean, they ended up taking Jalen Knoll in this draft, even after having drafted your first selection, a wide receiver.
Yep.
Would they have been as bold as that? I don't think they would have for Burden.
Two receivers within five picks of each other early in the second round would have been a big move. That would have been exciting.
Aggressively, yeah.
That would have been super exciting because the most interesting thing about that, Seth, other than just massive moves to get wide receivers, obviously the message that would have been sent was, man, they are trying to put C.J. Stroud in a real position to succeed. And I think the picks that they ended up making send that message anyways. That would have been a really forceful message of that. The other interesting thing about that would have been that Luther Burden III reportedly comes with a little extra, you know, like his inner circle. And so that would have been... It would have been interesting to see, you know, we probably would have asked Nick Caserio about it on this show. He probably would have gotten asked about it in the press conference. He's the one whose girlfriend was his manager. Yeah.
That part of it. I don't mind as much hearing that the mother is the manager or something. I mean, that's worked out pretty damn well for Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
But the girlfriend part of it, that scares the hell out of me.
I need to know how long they've been dating.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Is this a Jennifer Hudson type situation?
Jordan Hudson. Jordan.
Her too. She hasn't escaped my scrutiny, Sean. Jennifer Hudson.
You watch it,
head on a swivel, Jennifer Hudson.
No,
I'm doing some digging.
You dragged Jennifer into it a couple times last week, and the text page is really funny because they're like, Jennifer Hudson would make this Belichick thing super interesting.
It would be. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
You need to talk this into existence.
I think she's married. So I don't want to look. He's no Belichick.
Stop
maybe.
Belichick.
Okay, he allegedly was a home wrecker back when he was with the Giants, but that's neither here nor there.
She's allegedly married Belichick. Like, okay,
just looking for an edge, you know, just looking.
This Ursary story is good by Jonathan Alexander, basketball kid who the football coach at his high school kind of stumbled upon in the weight room. Like,
well,
hey,
he was a 6 foot. Two 220-pound freshman who's just sitting on a bench in the weight room, and the football coach
walks through. The
rule for the football players is no sitting down during the workout. So he's like, "What the hell's your deal?" That's not how he said it. That's how I envision it. And I don't know, Ariante Ursary. He's 6'6". Would he have had a future in basketball? I think it would have been it involved a lot of battling with a buffet. So I think he probably made the right choice.
He got good advice, man. He got good advice to go into football, obviously. So good article. Go out of your way to find it. Jonathan does a nice job there. So, yeah, they were definitely, according to two sources, looking to move up to get Ariante Ursary. Kamari Lassiter, little video that dropped yesterday. This is just stuff you do on Memorial Day. Like, this video dropped of Kamari Lassiter, and it got me excited about training camp and excited about this defense. This was Kamari Lassiter doing a little sit-down with the Texans social media team, talking about the Texans' D-line in the win over the Chargers in the playoffs.
Man, we got a D-line full of savages. Interior, edge rushers, they are just straight savages. Just hungry, just ready to go.
Here comes Will, the Terminator, with a sack on Herbert.
When Will got to the quarterback, that was lit. When Nico got to the quarterback, that was super lit. He hit his celebration, he was like, ha! Ah. He was like masked up, going crazy, and I'm like, oh yeah. And Rio got a sack.
The backfield again. Mario gets back there. They blast Herbert for another sack. Back to back.
He started doing his little, got on bait dance. That was lit too. Playing with a D-line like that just makes my life so much easier and fun, just because I know I'm not gonna have to cover for too long. It's like working hand and foot. Like, man, it's just fun.
Hand and foot. Never heard that before. Hand and glove, I've heard. Hand and foot, never heard before. But
yeah, and I think that, for one thing, I'm impressed that he remembered all the individual sacks.
Yes.
I've told you, Sean, good cornerbacks they're kind of like pitchers, and how pitchers can remember a sequence of pitches so well. Like, so many cornerbacks can just go back through an entire game, and you know, they don't have to go. They don't have to act like Sean McVay, like you're some pretty little show pony or something, and let the masses know how brilliant you are.
Party tricks, yes.
Yeah. So I like that. I like that he remembers their celebration.
I in watching that, the one thing that jumped out at me, I'm like, oh yeah. The one guy that, when we talk about this defensive line and all the guys they brought back, all the guys that are here already, I always forget that DeNico Autry is on this team. I don't know what it is. You know, I'm guessing the blind spot comes from he missed so much of last year with the suspensions.
Yeah.
He was banged up a little bit. He didn't play to the level that I think they wanted him to play for what they're paying him until that game against the Chargers. And he just, I forget who their right guard was, but he murdered that poor kid a couple of times in that game. I've forgotten about DeNico Autry, man. DeNico Autry, X factor for me.
Well, no, and I guess that's the one room where they have a lot of guys who are impactful players, but who are also well into their 30s.
Mm-hmm.
They have a bunch of old men in that room.
Yep.
And I think at some point, whether it's Derek Barnett or DeNico Autry or whomever else, you're just going to have some injuries along the way.
Yeah.
Which is fine, because they rotate so much.
Yep.
Derek Barnett got some love in a what was that list?
It was NFL.com. It was NFL.com had the most underappreciated players.
Yeah.
For each team, they had one. You know, it was one of these things. They do one for each team, and Derek Barnett, and maybe this is a sign that he's underappreciated. These articles, I like to just my own little exercise, Seth. I write down like three or four names before I page down to the Texans to see if I can guess. You know, at least guess get it in the group. I didn't have Derek Barnett on my list that I had jotted down, so maybe he is underappreciated.
You were the epitome. Remember, we accidentally left him out of the circle of trust after he had a
touchdown. Yes,
yeah,
I did.
And then he did it later again. He did it again later in the season.
He did.
And we remember to put him in the circle of trust. But yeah, I think that's great evidence that he's underappreciated by virtue of us having forgot him when he made one of the best plays all season. We left him out of the circle of trust.
Yeah, yeah. I had completely forgotten about that. Yeah, no, circle of swarm. Circle of swarm.
Yeah, circle of swarm.
Circle of swarm.
Circle of swarm. Circle of swarm is more short-sighted than the circle of trust. I was reflecting on this weekend, Sean. It was one of my many meditations as I was up in the woods.
What'd you learn?
With circle of swarm, it's almost a big part of it is almost an award for the previous week's game.
Yeah.
It's almost like getting a star on your helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Circle of trust with the Astros, that's more about what the word means. Like, okay, it's not just what you've done lately. It's do I trust that this is going to continue?
Yeah. And we had listeners kind of conflating the two last week with the circle of trust. They're like, hey, man.
That's true. Yeah.
Myers is batting .306 this month. Yeah, I know. It's trust. Do I trust that he's going to keep doing that? You're right.
Not enough people carry around our embossed book of the Circle of Trust and Circle of Swarm rules.
Yeah.
Which you can get on my Shopify for $35.
Right. Go and buy it. Yeah,
0.1% of proceeds go to a very good cause.
Just trust us.
Don't ask which cause. Just trust a good cause.
Just trust us on that. You can get it in PDF form or hard copy, whichever.
It's pop-up also.
Pop-up, yep. Yep.
Just watch out on page 3. Scary monster jumps out. It's Jose Abreu.
I used to love pop-up books.
Pop-up books are good until when they try to get too cute with them, where you have the little moving parts and everything.
Yeah.
Those last about, 3 months with any given toddler?
3 months,
before it's all torn up and everything.
Well, you lived with some gentle toddlers, man. 3 months.
There's masking tape and scotch tape holding some of the things
100%,
together.
100%. So there you go. Yeah, Derek Barnett, underappreciated. It is confirmed. He was underappreciated by me, confirmed by NFL.com. He is underappreciated.
He's so underappreciated that there are articles written about how he is unappreciated. Just like the offensive lineman last week. Finally, we get an award for never wanting recognition. We're so special because we never look for recognition. But finally, we have an award to recognize the fact that we don't want recognition. Go die, you fat bastard.
I knew you were going to kill Andrew Whitworth for that. I read that. Andrew Whitworth, for those who missed it, the NFL is going to be awarding the top offensive lineman the Protector of the Year Award next year, which is fine.
Yeah.
That's great. Deion Dawkins and Andrew Whitworth. Deion Dawkins, current lineman for the Bills. Andrew Whitworth, retired lineman for a couple of teams. They were both the catalysts of this award. And they were taking the biggest victory lap for two people who came up with an award. Deion Dawkins said that they made history by coming up with this award.
They did. It's like they, I think they ended the Vietnam War too. That's they were like baby boomers in their ability to really laud themselves for making all these drastic changes and what have you.
Made history.
We fought the man and we shut it down.
Andrew Whitworth.
Once we started getting drafted, for sure, that's when we got into it.
For the guys who don't ever ask for any credit.
Yeah.
We came up with an award.
Yeah.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of casino-style games like bingo, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. T&Cs apply.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. Nick Caserio was on with Chris Sims. On Chris Sims' podcast, it looks like he some cuts coming out of that over the last couple of days. It looked like a fun conversation, Seth, that the two of them had, Chris Sims and Nick Caserio.
They had a good old time.
Yeah,
yeah. That Chris. So there was. I always enjoy this when Caserio gets up and talks during the draft, where his memory of how picks and trades went down usually isn't as good as our memory is amongst fans, because he's handling calls and trades all the time because they're such active traders that he doesn't really remember the details of how things go down immediately afterwards, especially. So Chris Sims played a guessing game with him where Caserio in the last 3 years has only used three picks that were the team's original picks.
Yes.
Every other pick that they've made has come about through either a single or multiple trades, and that's how the Texans have ended up with it. So Sims just asked him, hey, in the last 3 years, do you remember which three picks were your own?
Before we play this, what was your confidence level that Nick would be able to get all three of these?
I would have said pretty low, because
yeah.
I thought I know we've cited some stat like similar to this, and I knew that one of them was a really tough one to remember.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually didn't think of the most obvious one first. I thought of the hardest one, so I didn't think he would get it.
All right, here we go.
So it'd be 23, 24, and 25. All right, so Stroud, okay. I want to say maybe one of the second round picks in 23.
Nope. Right round, but 24. And 24, you had a second 24. Round pick. Right.
Oh, okay. It would have been Kamari, right?
No, 42. I think it's Blake Fisher. Blake Fisher, round
was
two.
The original.
The original.
Kamari pick was the Minnesota pick, and then Blake Fisher was our original pick. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You can't even keep track of all the damn trades you did.
No,
I know.
I can't. Believe me, Chris, I can't. The last one, I probably would have no idea.
No. And then it's one that I wouldn't have remembered.
Probably like a late round pick or something.
It's round seven, right? It was Marcus Harris. Exactly right. And he's no longer with your team. So, yeah.
All right. Not bad. I'll give it a 1.5 out of 2.
I would have gotten the first two. Oh, I saw this clip on the internet yesterday, Seth, and I was screaming Blake Fisher. Stroud's an easy one. Like you got the yeah. second pick in the draft because you stunk. So you pick Stroud. Obviously, they trade up to get Will Anderson. Blake Fisher. I'm like, Blake Fisher. The Marcus Harris I could have been here. Well, I could have been here for 4 days. You know,
he throws so many late round picks in just to even out deals and what have you that it's almost like that pick was just the penny that happened to, you know, be left in the washing machine.
Totally.
It's just random chance that one was untouched. It wasn't like it was some sacred pick that could never be moved.
Great analogy. When I heard it was a seventh round pick, I'm like, that I would have never get, like, because you're right, he uses seventh round picks. He never uses those picks. He just uses them as fodder to go get other picks. You know, that he actually used one and used it used their own pick was wild to me. So good job, Nick. You got one, kind of got the second one. You needed some hints, and we'll absolve you for Marcus Harris.
It just reminds me, I used to have a coin collection as a kid. I got to call my mom. What the hell did Cynthia do with that? How much is that thing worth by now?
Dude, I had boxes and boxes of baseball cards, and I don't know where they are. You know what I mean? Like, and it's...
There's at least some really good ones in there.
Dude, yes. I mean, in the 70s and 80s, I mean, there's a box of cash sitting somewhere. And my dad's three houses removed from the house I grew up in now, so who knows who got those in every move that's been made, you know, and whatnot. Yeah. I just know I don't have them. I could
screw
use
those people. They're bastards.
Yeah,
no, this was I thought this was interesting because Nick got pretty kind of agitated when asked in one of the post-draft press conferences about drafting for need versus drafting best player available. He gave us a thought out answer. We had ChatGPT ask the question.
Yeah, it was a good
instead
job
of us.
You.
That way he could have get mad at big data, but not you and
That's
I.
That's right.
But this was Chris Sims yet again asked, hey, how do you navigate that drafting best player available versus drafting for need?
Yeah, it's you have to just figure out how do we get the best players in the building regardless of position.
Okay.
Now, if you have potentially an opening or opportunity and you have two players that may be graded on an equal plane, then maybe you lean towards one area or the other. But you don't want to rule anybody out because, quote unquote, what you have in the building or what you have on paper, because as we all know, things change in a hurry. So there may not be a, quote unquote, need or an opportunity in its current form, but a few months down the road, maybe things have changed or shifted and you're going to feel like, you know what, not that you knew that was going to happen, but you've just put yourself in a decent position. And I think you have to understand your team, understand where the contracts, you know, maybe how they're built. But ultimately, the competition is going to sort itself out amongst the players.
See, I like that answer. That's a good answer to that question.
And it is, I think he kind of, something we talked about with him is that notion that need can be a tiebreaker.
Yes.
If you got two guys at the exact same grade and you need this position, you don't need the other one. Okay, that's pretty simple. The biggest thing I've realized is I've spent more time on this than I wanted to, just kind of going around looking at different GMs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. The reason GMs get sensitive about it is because drafting for need, there's a perception or there's a connotation there that you're just constantly overdrafting guys just because you need that. And Nick had said something about when he was with us, you got to be careful about just how much you value need, because if you do it, and what I read from it was, if you do it continually, nobody's smart enough to be consistently smarter than the market or the 31 other NFL teams.
Yep.
If you stretch that often, it's going to come back to bite you. But I think it's also that it's why he trades so much. I think that if he's in a position where there's a really good player and he's the best player available, but it's not a position of need, then if there's a good deal out there, he's probably going to trade
Move
into
back.
A different band of players.
Yeah. Now, I just look at their draft this year, and I'm just going to go with the first five guys they took. The four guys they took on day two, plus Woody Marks, who they traded a third from next year's draft to move in and get in the fourth round. There were a lot of ties getting broken on those first five picks. You know what I mean? Like there was, because I feel like all five of those first picks, if you were to have listed the needs for the Texans before the draft, I would have said offensive line for sure. I would have said wide receiver for sure. I would have said another dynamic running back for sure. And I probably would have on defense said depth at corner. You know, they had too many games last year that if Kamari Lassiter missed the game, you're trotting D'Angelo Ross out there. You know, their cornerback depth fell off a cliff. Now, they signed Ronald Darby, and he's a vet, and he's solid enough. but they draft Jalen Smith out of USC. Like, I would submit that all five of those guys they picked were need positions for the Texans.
Right, and I think, again, like it is every single year with Caserio, he moved around a lot to get to some of those spots.
Yes.
And that where if, like, okay, with these guys are available here, if we get to here, that makes sense on our trade value chart. And likewise with trading back from 25, I think they, as he said, there were at least a couple guys that they thought were appropriate there, but they got an offer that made sense and they took the extra draft capital because the Giants quote unquote lost by trade value on that.
Yeah.
But they were perfectly willing to move back up into the first.
Do you like his approach? Do you like his approach to the draft?
Yeah, I like it a lot because the prevailing thinking in a lot of circles is, hey, trade back. The more swings at the plate is possible is better. DaCosta, the GM of the Ravens, had a good interview about that. Yeah. That was very much a strategy with Bill Belichick for years. And that was where Chris Sims actually pointed that out and asked Caserio, you know, how is this different from New England and why is it different from New England?
That's how we approach it. I would say, here in Houston, we probably have shown more, I would say, ability or just openness to going up and down or sitting versus in New England. I would say a little bit more trade back.
Right.
There's no one size fits all. You have to do what is best for you, what you think makes the most sense.
Yeah. And I think that, like, Nick's very aware of the theory that, hey, as many picks as possible is a smart way to do it.
He mentioned DaCosta in the interview himself.
Right, he actually mentioned DaCosta earlier in the interview. And there's just, I think the way he does it, it's way more aggressive. The danger would be, okay, are you moving around this aggressively because you think you see opportunities that other people don't see? I don't think he looks at it that way. I think it's that he wants to be able to address need, but he doesn't want to do it at a stupid cost.
Yes.
So they try to remain true to their board as much as possible, but he's perfectly willing to move up and down to try to get to those spots to where they can help the team most.
Yep. It was a good conversation. Go out of your way to find it, Caserio and Chris Sims. It was a good interview. Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Friday. Diana Rossini got some what I'm assuming is owner Anon info, Seth, from the Tush Push Summit meeting. Couple days ago, as you pointed out, they had a meeting that had everybody there to talk about it. Then they had a private meeting with just the owners, presumably to keep all the secrets in one room. You know, like that will be an airtight room, the one with the owners. Nope.
Yes.
Diana Rossini's just posting stuff. There's definitely owners that are texting her and whatnot. Good for her.
Yeah, these billionaires who are on, like, medically unethical doses of testosterone replacement, whichever study drug they're using these days, everything else, those will be the guys that won't talk. The guys with just incredibly large egos, and understandably so.
Yes.
Yeah, they're the ones that you can trust them to keep a secret.
Exactly,
sure.
Exactly. The funniest piece is, not funniest, I think most noteworthy and funny, from Diana Rossini's piece about this, about the Tush Push Summit meeting with the owners. One of the quotes from Jeffrey Lurie, who did a one-hour speech, and I'm not exaggerating, did a one-hour presentation on why the Tush Push should not be banned. He's the owner of the Eagles. Quote, "It's the safest play in the history of the game. Whoever votes to ban this play is taking liability for putting risk on our quarterbacks." End quote. That's a "the blood is on your hands" kind of thing. Right?
There's so much drama in the NFL this weekend. We get these guys making these grandiose. Meanwhile, the NFL is claiming that it's a safety hazard, but they leave Alan Mills, chief medical officer, at home, doesn't testify. That's the weirdest and dumbest thing about this entire campaign by the majority of the teams to get rid of the Tush Push are them routinely bringing up how dangerous a play it is with absolutely no evidence to say that it is.
They make terrible lawyers. Goodell wanted this play out of the game, and this is basically kind of like a courtroom sort of thing almost, where you're trying to convince people, trying to convince a jury in a way. And you don't bring in the star witness. Like, Alan right. Mills would have been the star witness in this thing.
Well, you see, my client suffers from multiple personality disorder. Do you have any witnesses that could testify to that? No, just trust me, bro. Just trust me. Have you seen him? Super weird dude.
Now maybe Alan Mills thinks that it is a safe play. You know, maybe he wasn't going to, you know, do the dance that Goodell wants him to do. That's why he wasn't there. One high ranking.
I don't think that it was that he had a flat tire on the way to the conference.
No, you're probably right. One high ranking league source said, quote, this has to be another owner. Lurie was like a guy trying to convince his girlfriend why she shouldn't leave him, end quote. So he's up there sounding desperate, it sounds like, at least according to this one high ranking source.
According to that high-ranking source, I'm guessing as an owner or family of the owner, because family members were allowed in,
too. Yeah,
yeah. They had to pass a DNA test.
Yeah.
And, I'm wondering about that. That definitely was somebody that voted for the ban.
Oh, yeah.
I can't see Lurie getting up there and saying, oh, please, baby, please just give me one more chance. I know I just say,
Would you? I'm being serious. If anybody went up there to try to convince me for an hour about this, that would have affected my vote in a negative way. I'd have been like,
screw you, bad way. Yeah.
Wasting an hour of my time with this. I'm not even joking.
There's no way it was a concise presentation.
No chance.
There's no way that he got up there. And I don't think it was a 20-minute presentation followed by 40 minutes of questions.
Right.
If it were 20 minutes of presentation followed by 40 minutes of questions, I could excuse that. But okay. I can't excuse a guy just getting up there and rambling for
an hour pontificating. And it had to be that because there were reports of other owners being like, we done yet here? Jed York, like, have you gotten everything done yet here, Jeffrey? Are we good?
The whole thing that what I might really if I tried to hit the guilt complex or put a guilt trip on them, I might have to really point out the disparity between this play being banned versus other plays. Where with other plays, it's either been a serious safety issue or there have been some tactics and strategies that were considered unsportsmanlike or what have you. Through, you know, the Seahawks and the Patriots back in the day were getting really handsy in the defensive backfield and getting away with it. So they just had to tweak it to be more like the game is supposed to look in the rule book.
Yeah.
This is just 100% a team taking advantage of the current rule book and doing a better job at playing really clean and legal football with it. And it grates against me that you could ban it in a year in which the team that's best at that play won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
There was nothing dodgy about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that makes me some kind of a hypocrite or if I'm trying to straddle the fence. I just couldn't bring myself to do it this year. If the Eagles are eliminated in the wild card round next year or something and I still don't like it, I'm like, okay, yes. Now at least we're not consciously striking a blow to the best team in the league.
Yeah, I don't think there's any playbook or anything. I think your rationale makes perfect sense to me. You know, like there's no good or bad. I mean, there's bad criteria for sure for voting. Look, mine is I just think it looks stupid. Your reasons are way better than mine.
No. I don't like the play. Yeah. It's just that sequence in the NFC Championship game where they lined up six times to do the tush push.
How long was it?
And through a combination of penalties and not making it, it ended up being 4.5 minutes of the most boring football you can watch.
Unacceptable. Yeah, you can't have that. You can't have that.
Did you know that it's proven that attractive people tend to like hot, spicy food? Yes, it's true. Hot people like hot food. Introducing 5-Hour Energy's new Spicy Cinco de Mango. This little shot is sweet, spicy, and a tad unhinged. Just like your favorite party guest. It hits with a bold chili flavor, then smooths things out with that juicy mango kick. Honestly, I tried it the other day, and wow, it brought the heat and the hype. Total game changer. Research even says more than half of spicy food fans think they're hot. And you know what? They're not wrong. Hot people like hot food. Get your spice on with 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango. Think you're hot? Prove it with this spicy mango shot. And yes, it even comes with hot sauce. Turn up the heat this Cinco de Mayo or any day because life's too short for bland. You're hot. Your energy shot should be too. Get energized. Get spicy. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is here for you. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is only available online for a limited time. Head to 5hourenergy.com to order yours today.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe.
Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Nerds! Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Hope your Thursday is going beautifully. John Lopez, Reginald Atatula, and Figgy Fig hanging out with you.
It is going beautifully. Thank you very much.
I'm very glad to hear that. Yeah. Very glad to hear that.
Figgy, how about you?
It's going great, man.
Beautifully.
I'm not going to lie. And I will apologize now because I feel like it might have happened once or twice. If you hear me coughing, one of them days, ladies and gentlemen, one of them days, as I pop a Power Mint in
there
my mouth.
There we go.
It's funny. One of these promos. Are you coughing in one of the promos we had?
Am I?
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
It's a Jake Myers promo. It sounded like you was coughing in the background.
So that was a couple days ago. I might have been coughing. Yeah. I might have been coughing.
I might have to investigate and see.
Yeah. Okay, yes, do the investigation. But I plead not guilty.
Yeah.
But how about this? Speaking of something I am guilty of, is every time we start talking about the offense, what do I make sure to use as a disclaimer here, Lopez?
What is your disclaimer?
My disclaimer is, but I don't know what this offense actually is going to look like, right? I think that there's...
No one does. We can guess.
Right.
We can speculate.
And so let's do a little bit of speculation because I was trying to think and dig a little deeper on this because, you know, at some point I do need to, you know, suss out and feel out what it could be. And of course, we can just wait and see what it looks like, but we can try and give ourselves a little bit of a feel of what that offense could be. All right, so Nick Haley coming in. Obviously, we've talked about his couple of influences, right? There is the last few years that he's played in, or rather played. He's been a coach under Sean McVay in Los Angeles. And Sean McVay's offense is an offshoot of kind of a West Coast type offense. Like that you have a lot of those principles within what's happening there. And then you go to his time that he worked under McDaniel there in New England.
Yeah.
Under what is, and I always forget what the damn name of this offense is. And so, of course, as I get ready to say, I think it's Earnhardt Perkins offense. But, I mean, we can just, for our purposes, call it, you know, really more of just the New England offense.
Yeah.
Right?
I was about to say, I never even heard that one. Oh, man, I just call it the Patriots way.
Yeah, right. And, of course, with Josh McDaniel, like they found, you know, various ways of playing this differently, right? And so with those offenses, to my understanding, and I probably should have gotten John Harris on the phone, like just for his baseball mind, but there you go. Yeah. Like that is the football experience that you get from John Harris. But like, you know, the West Coast offense is gonna be a lot more kind of shorter passing situations, get the ball out quickly, and those types of things compared to what the New England Patriots have done, at least passing-wise. I haven't even talked about the rushing game, but passing-wise is what I've been thinking on. And if you kind of think about what the Patriots do or what the Patriots have done, it's a lot more intensive on the quarterback. It's a lot more kind of option routes, things that require your wide receivers to be on point with reading the defense, and you know, obviously your quarterback to be an orchestrator of what's happening here. Mm-hmm. And I think both of these come with a certain level of pro and con with this. So I kind of wanted to examine which one, if it is indeed one or both, or like it leans more to one rather than the mm-hmm. other. Mm-hmm. Which of those would be more preferable? Like the West Coast offense, where I think that would benefit the likes of Christian Kirk.
Yeah.
Benefit the likes of Jalen Knoll. I mean, obviously, even Nico Collins, we've seen how when he gets the ball in flat spaces, in short spaces, he has the athleticism, the burst to be able to find mm-hmm. find room and make explosive plays. I do also, though, wonder, does that also help the offensive line getting the ball out quickly? But does that also limit what you're doing offensively? Does that then kind of, can it be a little predictable? Is it something that's limiting versus what New England does where...
Yeah.
It does feel like it fits some of the descriptions that have been had, like C.J. Stroud getting up there and saying, I'm going to have more control of this mm-hmm. offense. That sounds somewhat like Tom Brady controlling that offense, right? Is it going to be in the game plan nature of it? The versatility, that sounds like Josh McDaniels mm-hmm. running that offense. But at the same time, that's going to require Nick Caley to be on his game when it comes to really finding the right game plan per time compared to Josh McDaniels, who has a lot of experience. It's going to require wide receivers. When you're looking at having probably two rookie wide receivers impact your offense very, very frequently and in a big way, having to be very attuned to what defenses are doing and how to run off of them. And then also, I think that's going to require C.J. Stroud. Like, I think we believe C.J. Stroud to be a very smart guy, a very capable guy of doing that. Mm-hmm. But how much would be too much of putting responsibility on him? I think those are the ways that I view both of those. Is there one that is more appealing to you?
Well, as soon as you brought this up, you know, that we wanted to talk about this, I started thinking it can kind of be both, and I think it will be pieces of both. And the biggest reason is Nick Caley's biggest influence, I feel, with the Patriots way, and I know we all kind of cringe, you know, when we hear that, but, you know, the Patriots style of offense, I think it's going to be more prevalent in the run game. I really do. And I've said this, and I don't mean it as an insult. His history, his background is not a lot of passing game, you know, creativity as a passing game, you know, sort of coach, play caller.
I know you've said that before, but it just kind of seems wild considering that his position in L.A. was the pass game coordinator.
Yeah, but there are a lot of reasons that you can get that title and not necessarily – like Sean McVay ran the passing game.
Certainly.
I mean,
I don't think anybody would say that.
No one would argue that, right? Yeah. But I think what he did is, as passing game coordinator, was be involved, you know, maybe in some of that. But I keep going back to this. He came in and they kept Gerard Johnson as the quarterback's coach.
Okay.
And that is a guy. That's why I think it can be a combo, kind of a combo platter of the two things. He knows the run game. He knows blocking schemes as a tight ends coach. He knows the offensive line. He kept Cole Popovich, you know, who also has that New England background,
right?
You know, in terms of the run game. When it comes to the passing game, make no mistake, it's his offense. He's going to call the plays, but I think he's going to lean heavily on what do you think, you know, what do you want to do, C.J. Stroud? What do you think, Gerard Johnson? How can we implement that in our offense? But I think ultimately, what it's going to come down to in the passing game. Is I don't think there's any question that C.J. Stroud probably wants to have a bigger say in things. That doesn't mean he has to be Tom Brady. You know, how many Tom Bradys are there?
And that's the thing that I tend to agree with you, right? Yeah. You mentioned Cole Popovich and his influence being there, again, mm-hmm. Largely in what New England has done. I think I lean so heavily on C.J. Stroud saying with great confidence in that presser that he had an opportunity to talk to the assembled media that he was going to put his thumb on this offense. That also feels like being able to step up to the line and, you know, kind of dictate what's happening, have power, which, again, feels a lot like that New England offense. Also, another thing I was thinking about is, again, with the West Coast offense, I don't typically think nearly as much about attacking downfield, mm-hmm. which I think, you will have more opportunities to.
And you have to with your receivers.
Right. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that CJ wants, and I think that's something that you want to be able to do with these receivers. And it also, again, pointing to what this 8-3-2 texter points out, whichever offense turns CJ into the point guard that he is, and I think
That's what he wants.
That's where I'm starting to lean more mm-hmm. towards mm-hmm. that it kind of looks. And, of course, there's going to be a mashup in there, but that brings me back to the questions that I have there, mm-hmm. which is how comfortable are you then if that's a situation with more responsibility on your wide receivers? Also, like, there's a graduation there.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite the possibility that not only – does the quarterback have more responsibility than wide receivers do in analyzing what's happening and making the right decision? Yeah. And whatever communication happens within those places, that opens up more opportunities for breakdown of communication. So that's going to require even more of a step up between CJ and the guys that are in that room to be on their P's and Q's. And that's a wide receiver room that, if we're being completely honest, of the guys that I think we all feel comfortable knowing are going to be greatly involved, there's one of those guys that's played before with CJ.
Collins. Absolutely. But I think, you know, you can be in a place where you don't have to be Tom Brady, but you still have control at the line of scrimmage. And I think what he really wants control of is not just like being on the same page with the wide receivers and giving them the Aaron Rodgers wink and both of them know, you know, exactly what to do. I think it's as much as just protection, calling out protections, making sure you have confidence to be able to do that. And you have not deliberate predetermined options. Like, he wants to be able to say, I want to throw the ball here, so I'm going to change the play.
Sure.
You know?
And I do think that is something that would be in tow if it's, like, leans primarily to what New England has done. Mm-hmm. I'm just keep looking at that. But the one thing that I keep coming back to as well, if you are going there, and, I mean, this is something that we kind of have had with the phrase game plan offense, is I think that it becomes more variable, at least in the way that Josh McDaniels has done it, and maybe it just looks differently. But that, again, leans even more heavily upon a first-time play caller to have the right decisions in a lot of these circumstances. And, yes, you have C.J. Stroud as a backdrop, Bobby Slowick talked about last year, to make his answers right. You know, so sometimes get up to the line, and if what was called is not right, be able to audible, be able to move things around to a play that you know has a chance of success. But again, C.J. Stroud is also still a third-year player. And again, I'm not trying to cast any aspersions to his ability to do this. I think that my offensive philosophy this whole offseason was, man, I would love to mitigate some of the question marks. And it feels like when it comes to the way that they handle the offensive line, and now if I am indeed right in this kind of exercise that we're doing, that you go more towards the New England way, there's more question marks on how that offense functions to maximum efficiency, especially when you talk about, as we were talking about, starting off with the Rams, playing a lot of these high leverage teams in the AFC on the road. Like, those types of things, those are things that kind of get me thinking a lot and maybe not finding resolutions or answers that I love in those moments.
I frankly trust C.J. Stroud.
That's where it falls out. I'm just going to trust C.J. Stroud.
I mean, if you're going to have a franchise quarterback and you say it's only his third year, which is accurate, but I'm like, it's his third year. like there's two ways to look at that. It's his third year. I understand, you know, it's his second offensive coordinator and all that.
First in a new system. It's operating at its top is an advanced one.
If he's a franchise quarterback, he's thrown for 4,000 yards in this league already. He wants this. You know, you have to believe in C.J. Stroud making the right calls here. You have to do it. I mean, that's the whole idea of drafting him.
Yeah, you know? I think that's fair. And 832, great point also being brought in, talking about, Christian Kirk running option routes and being utilized as a weapon. And that's the place where, I mean, I feel great about Nico Collins making those decisions. I feel pretty damn good about Christian Kirk making those decisions. Mm-hmm. I stop and I go, I don't think I feel bad about the rookies coming in, but it's also maybe unfair to ask them to immediately be great at that. So all of these things are things that are bouncing around in my head. And look, any new offense is going to come with its challenges. I'm not here operating in a place where I'm asking them to come in with something that's going to work perfectly right from jump. That's an unfair expectation.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking on what is most likely and what are the challenges that might be there in those instances. And on top of the idea that New England loves using them tight ends, don't they?
That and as well.
We've talked about how that's going to be an issue probably no matter what offensive system you get, that you don't have a very well-rounded tight end to factor in the way that goes. And that's another place where Nick Caley is going to have to be innovative and creative on top of the every week game planning or whatever what you're doing, is also how are you going to be creative in using these tight ends in a way that's not going to mirror the ways that tight ends were used up there in New England.
No, that's absolutely true. But, you know, it doesn't have to be the extreme one direction or the other. And I think maybe that's where a lot of people might have worry in terms of C.J. Stroud. Oh, my gosh. You know, he, as you mentioned, third year player, has a lot to put on him. That's fair. But he's not going to be Peyton Manning out there, you know, calling the entire game. All he wants is to have a little more control where he had none last year. There are stories of him coming off the field and just like, I wanted to do this, but this was my only other option. And, you know, it doesn't have to be Peyton Manning. There is a sweet spot in there, you know?
No, and I agree to that. Yeah. And I want to make this more clear because I don't think I was. When I talk about him being a third-year player, and I know somebody's pointing to the idea that Clint has said, hey, man, third year, you should know these things. Yeah. It's not necessarily about can he handle it.
It's a lot.
A vacuum. Yeah. It's can he also be so good that he helps mitigate the things that a first-year play caller might also have issues with. Because it works a little different if you have an experience. Like, you have Matt Stafford as your quarterback doing whatever you're doing, and then you have Nick Caley where you go, all right, Nick Caley coming in things, but wherever he misses, I feel confident about this veteran quarterback over here maybe picking up the slack. I don't know that I can say that, especially as C.J. Stroud is also picking up whatever offense this is. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that I'm talking about are little, you know, points of potential failure, sure. I guess, is the way that I'm thinking about it.
No, these are all questions that we're going to be watching and wondering about and worrying about in some cases. What I believe is ultimately the case is if they're going to have a good, if Nick Caley is going to be a good offensive coordinator, he's going to manage the run game to a much better degree than it was in the past, not just Joe Mixon creating his own things. And he's going to trust C.J. Stroud enough that he can make an adjustment on the field from the play that was called. That is not, I don't think that's asking too much. You know, you don't have to be, like I said, you don't have to be an offensive coordinator out there. Just we trust you to make the right decision and change the play if you need to.
Yeah, and so I think you're right also. I was talking with John Harris a little bit about it to pick his football mind, and he kind of goes, lean towards that New England, but also still have some of these West Coast principles that would benefit.
Yeah, combo.
And I mean, of course, I don't think there are any this is a pure West Coast system in the year 2025. I think that we have had so much intermingling of all these things that you can talk about the very basis and then you find principles that go all the way around. Just trying to ponder on what that could look like and what some of those other portions of it, the unintended consequences of some sorts that could come along with whatever decision is made with Nick Caley coming in.
Yeah, I think the good thing about this is he's been around. So he's been in different offenses. So he could take some of everything and just put it into and make it what they say the Texans offense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's probably right to just lean on the idea of got to trust C.J. Stroud, the intelligence that he brings, the athleticism that he brings, and trust that it comes together pretty quickly. I think that's the other thing that I think about. If Nick Caley is here for multiple years, though, I do love the New England side as opposed to like more of a West Coast based side when you talk about year over year, like into that second year, then that's something. But I mean, you can't think that far ahead. It's got to be what can you do in the 2025 season and how can you push towards a Super Bowl? All right. Now we've gotten the chance to sit with, digest the Texans 2025 schedule, all the NFL schedule, to be honest. It's been a week. What's the biggest worry? I guess where do you find the most confidence within the 2025 Texans schedule? 713-572-462.
Yeah, we can go through some of these big close games, etc. But I was kind of thinking about this because ESPN released a win probability for every team for every game.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this: do you want to go with every game that the Texans have more than a 50%? Projection to win, because some of them are like 51, 53, et cetera, or more than 60 to talk about where they think the Texans will land.
Well, I'm interested in how many games they even have the Texans as the team that is a favorite in a way, right? I know that I was looking at the betting odds on a lot of these games, and the Texans, I think they're favored in 9 games as of this point. Yeah. I don't know how much I lean into that in this moment because there's still a lot to be seen about what these teams actually are by the time that we start playing football in September. But, I mean, just the idea that they're only favored in 9 at this point, how do you feel about that? Because that kind of, I mean, well, it makes sense to some degree because they have questions themselves that I've been very vocal about. We'll talk more about that in this program as well. How do you feel about the idea that they were favored in 9 of these?
Well, it ties in with what I was looking at with ESPN.
Let's go for it.
9 is not exactly... You know, it's not exactly encouraging in terms of you've gone 10-7 and won the division and, you know, played at home on a Saturday afternoon. So here's the thing. If you're counting win probability over 50%, now keep in mind that includes a 51% win probability against Tampa Bay at home.
Just win, baby.
Yeah. 54 against the Chargers, 55 against the Broncos. Anything over 50%, 13 games. Figgy, that's your, you know, what'd you predict?
Okay, 12? So yeah, Figgy's got him at 13-4, and then there we go. Move
well,
on.
I have Ashley 12-5.
Oh, yeah, my bad. Give him a little bit of wiggle room. You know, you got to be reasonable with these things.
So
you
if
know?
You're just going by over 50%, they have more than a 50% today win probability in 13 games. Now, I kind of was looking at 60% because that means, okay, they really feel like they really feel like you're going to win.
Okay, and where are you at that point?
8.
Ooh, okay.
8. At the L.A. Rams, and it kind of got me thinking about what we're talking about. At L.A. Rams, 48%.
Okay, I thought you were going to say that was one of those 60s because I would not view that at all. That's one of the games that once we started getting leaks or releases on the schedule last week, I was like, ugh, didn't want to see that. I was hoping to get a game like that against the Rams, a good team, a team that has some real, you know, real talent when you talk about quarterback, play caller synergy, you talk about real weapons. Obviously, defensively, I'm not as worried, but then also a pass rush that's going to really test the weak spot of your team that you're just putting together and hoping that continuity and a level, not continuity, that a level of cohesion will help. Well, week one, how much cohesion do you have, especially with the shortened play, preseason rather? That's one of those ones that I would probably have the most it's one of my biggest worries, in fact, early on.
Of the eight games that have more than a 60% chance of win probability, 5 are in the division. That's what I'm like, oh Lord.
That's what the division is, though. Like, I think we were all in that place.
Here we go again.
But that does bring up here from the 3-4-6, their biggest worry is that the Jags figure it out.
Yeah, sure.
Because I mean, that is an offense with Liam Cohen, or at least offensive play caller. He did some really good things there in Tampa once Canales left there for the job in Carolina. Like, that was one of those things. You go, Dave Canales leaves, you go, oh, are they going to be able to do that? And yes, they continued to be able to do that. Will he be able to carry some of those modern, newer thought process, especially having the synergy with a GM that is willing to have him do that? The Magnificent Gladstone, like, is willing to give him the things that he wants, leaning towards the offense. Will he find some answers there?
Yeah.
I mean, I still lean towards no, right? Like, we've seen Trevor Lawrence have his struggles. It's still a brand new offense and all those things. But I'm not in a place where I'm turning a blind eye to the possibility that the Jaguars could find some level of additional life that they weren't able to find with the somewhat dysfunction that was coming in with Doug Peterson.
So highest win probability and lowest win probability. I know you're thinking that. You want to start with the highest or the lowest?
Give me the gimme. What's the highest win possibility for the Texans at this point?
The top three are Las Vegas Raiders, 73%.
In week 16,
In week 16.
Okay.
Jacksonville at home, 71%. And Tennessee at home, 75%. So, again, two division teams.
And the Jacksonville at home would be 10. And then you said Tennessee at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that game is, that one's one of the earlier games now, isn't it? That's week 4.
Damn. Yeah.
Okay.
So lowest probability, I think we probably know the answers. The absolute lowest is at Baltimore Ravens. They're giving them a 20% chance to win that game. And then, of course, the other one that's relatively low but not that low, at Buffalo Bills, 41% chance to win. At the Chiefs, 42. Those are the lowest three.
And you said the Buffalo Bills coming here, week 12.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, Buffalo Bills coming here, yeah.
No, that's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested that they also view that with the with the Raiders week 16, because those are the ones where, I mean, I think the Raiders are going to be pretty good, a better team, rather. I think that Geno Smith is a better quarterback. I think that one of the things that, I don't know that they're going to be a great team by any stretch, but one of the things that Pete Carroll does is he stabilizes things. Yeah. He does normalize things. And I think, like, remember that time we were all clamoring, or maybe not all of us, but a lot of us were clamoring for the idea of Chip Kelly being the offensive
That's an expensive offensive coordinator, too, man.
Like, they pay good money. I think that Chip Kelly's going to be given the leeway to run an offense. We still don't know what that will look like at this level in the NFL again, coming back up. But I think he's been given an adequate amount of weapons where I go, that could come together. Yeah. And you give him the full season to find that.
Yeah.
I don't think that is as big of a given as is said there. But, you know, hopefully at that point also for the Texans, if your offensive line is clicking and in the ways that you hope, and your defense is what your defense is, that you probably do have a decent shot there.
Yeah.
So coming back to the original question.
That's what I was going to go next. All right, so let's start with the opener. You have only it's kind of 50-50. You have a 48% chance of winning against the Rams in L.A. What's your biggest worry or biggest confidence that it can, you will lose or you could win that game?
I mean, the worry is very front and center. Mm-hmm. It's the offensive line coming out week one out of training camp. You're probably going to have a little bit of moving around during training camp unless five guys establish themselves very early on, because mm-hmm. the whole conversation is we're going to find the first five or the best five. And I don't know that immediately jumps out necessarily. And if mm-hmm. you're taking time, that even cuts down the time even more, the idea of getting those guys cohesive.
Yeah.
Week ones haven't looked great. In this NFL, in this, you know, three pregame or preseason games era and the 17-game era,
yeah,
you need to be – when you play the Rams, I feel like you want to be hitting on all cylinders. You're on the road. It's a lot of things that I think scheduled-wise mm-hmm. are not an advantage for you. I think the ultimate thing that gives me a level of confidence, what is the Los Angeles Rams' strength? Their play calling, the confidence that they have in the quarterback. Mm-hmm. What is the Texans' strength? It is absolutely without question the defense and a defensive secondary that you have not only – I don't know – yeah, you've made stronger at the top end because you had CJ Gardner-Johnson instead of like Eric Murray, who ended up playing a lot of snaps there or what have you. Even – I might argue that CJ Gardner-Johnson at this point might be better than Jimmy Ward at the point that he is in his career, considering those things. Yeah. So I think you took up the higher end of this. But then also you bring up the bottom end, right? We didn't talk about this at all yet, but – they bring back, and of course, as I'm getting there, it's and Miles Bryant, right? Mm-hmm. The cornerback who he took a nice, he gave you a little bit of a good play mm-hmm. at that nickelback position that Jalen Petrie had, you know, when you needed to jump in there. Like, that gives you a little bit of confidence there. You bring in Ronald Darby. You bring in, you bring back D'Angelo Ross. You have depth there in a place where I feel comfortable about if those guys have to spare somebody that you have that there. And then we know what the top end is. So I feel very good about the entirety of this defense going up against the Rams, even as they add Davante Adams to Puka Nacua. Like, I feel good about being able to neutralize that. And then all of it is just, what is the offense able to do?
You know what kind of gives me confidence? If I had to, like, you have to pick one. What's going to, you know, what gives you worry? We just established that, and I agree with Reggie. But you know what kind of gives me confidence is, yes, Nick Caley is going to be important in this game. But he's going to be important for the Texans' defense, too. He's been in every meeting with McVay, every game plan, everything offensively. That he knows what Nick Caley likes to attack. He knows what Nick Caley likes. I mean, excuse me, Sean McVay likes to attack. What Sean McVay likes, to do offensively, how he prepares for an opener, and all that other stuff. And it happens all the time. Hey, I'm going to walk over to the defensive room for a little bit and see if we can help them a little bit. You know, what about a couple of other games here before we get out of here?
We might need to circle back around to this a little bit later as well, because I feel like there's more games in mm-hmm. here that I want to kind of examine at a deeper level.
Well, the big coin flip games, and I'm not even going to count the Ravens. They got a 20% chance of winning to win. I don't think anybody.
We could just skip.
So you don't have any confidence in there?
Okay, let's do it. What would give you confidence for them to go into?
Oh, I wasn't asking you to do that. I would love to tell you that I have the answer here for you. In thinking about it, I really don't.
Yeah,
like, I'm not looking at this. That is a really tough game. Like, I just don't. That's a really tough game. I have a lot of respect for what they do, both offensively mm-hmm. and defensively. Yeah, I don't really have a great answer for you.
Yeah, my confidence would probably be maybe hopefully the defense can hold them to something, man.
Yeah.
Make the game a little nasty.
I was thinking the Bills game. That could be a kind of a just later in the year. They only give you a 41% chance of winning. What would give you confidence to win that game? Last year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess the thing that you then also lean into, right, of the teams, of those kind of high AFC mm-hmm. teams that you're playing this season, that's the one you're playing at home, and you wonder if year over year you're going to get that same home field advantage type feel that you mm-hmm. got against opposing quarterbacks at NRG, which is they just looked, not on their game.
They killed them.
The Bills were one of those teams, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Josh Allen just looked a little bit off in that game, and so I think that's one of the things that you can hope for in this circumstance, is that Josh Allen, coming off an MVP season, in that MVP season mm-hmm. looked a little frazzled. As you make this defense better, as this defense has another year, as you also remember, you played them early. That was week five, mm-hmm. wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That is 5 weeks in for Kamari Lassiter. That's 5 weeks in for Kalen Bullock. Those guys have a whole nother season and a half at that point by the time you face them
yeah.
of football under their belt. Does that then change the, or does that make that even more difficult for Josh Allen, who we understand we expect to be a very good quarterback, but in that, in those parameters with these guys, can you make it even more difficult on them? Yeah. I think that that would be the thing that I look for.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Oh yeah, Tony.
Happy birthday to you.
I feel this in my soul.
You're going to hit this next one, ain't you?
Happy birthday, dear.
Be scared.
Happy birthday to you.
Football in H-Town is on the rise.
I love D'Amico Ryans, man. I tell you what.
H-Town, I'm back.
Our guy B. Scott has all the latest from the gridiron.
I don't see no bitches nowhere around here.
It's time for your weekly Texans report.
We ain't laying down for nobody.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Ah, yes. Happy birthday. My man is in that mid-30s. In that mid-30 run right now, Brandon Scott joins us. It is the Texans report. Might have a little Rockets in here. Little report here for B. Scott as he joins us every Wednesday. And it is this young man's birthday. Happy birthday, big dog.
Hey, man, firmly planted in those mid to late 30s now. Cannot.
What is it? 30 what?
36.
Yeah, 30,
once you get out of 35, it's
yeah, I'm on the other side. I'm on the other side of 35 officially now. So, yeah, I'm climbing. I'm glad to be here on this side. So,
happy birthday. It's
pretty good, man. Feeling pretty good about it, man. No doubt.
Sure, man. There it is. Happy birthday to Brandon Scott. Send him some love.
Was that Tony singing?
That was Tony, man. Tony,
I think I remember that. That was a couple of years ago for your birthday, right?
It was somebody's. Somebody's birthday. She let
out to Tony. Yeah, Tony holding it down.
Yeah, she does. Man, happy birthday to you, man. We're good. I hope you have a good time tonight. Hope you get everything you deserve to get.
We need to do a little combo birthday, man, for show and B. Scott.
Yeah, man.
I mean, we're on this weight loss kick, so we can hit the old salad joint down the street or something.
No strippers.
Oh, I thought he was wild with it or something.
Oh, no
y'all
shake?
Y'all thinking salad instead of strippers?
Yeah.
I can go either way.
That's a better thing.
B. Scott, you know Clint ain't going nowhere.
Hey, I'm good for a good time. I'm down for a good time, man. We'll go either way.
Don't you do that. Wow. Don't you hate in there.
Dang. Wow!
Don't kill the dream, T-Mill.
I do want to get towards, because we're about to make the turn towards the Texans until some of this free agency hits with the Rockets, and we can see some of that stuff there. And of course, we will visit with you on that. But before we get to the Texans, I did want to hit you, because we have not talked to you since a lot of these reports are going out with the Giannis stuff, and that's the one that you're hearing the most. We're looking at the Final Four right now, and superstars are coming in different looks now, right? Like, if you look at all of the lead guys, especially, you know, Edwards is the first, you know, number one overall pick. You can look at him and you can see he's got the athleticism and all that. SGA, I don't think when they made the trade with the Clippers that's what OKC was going to get, the guy who just got announced the league MVP. Brunson doesn't generally fit the role as a one that we're accustomed to, and neither does Halliburton. But we're seeing the game is kind of changing, and there is maybe a thought that the Rockets look and say, well, maybe we got one of those. Maybe we don't need to get one of those. I don't know. I hope that is not the case. But what's your confidence level that we will see a significant change with the roster?
Yeah, so a couple of those examples that you mentioned are cautionary tales, right? Like, if the Clippers knew that SGA was going to be SGA, they would not have traded him for Paul George, right? If the Sacramento Kings knew that Tyrese Halliburton would be the Tyrese Halliburton that we see right now, they wouldn't have traded him for Domantas Sabonis, right? So they're the cautionary tales, and you got Rockets fans that are looking at it like, hey.
Maybe if the Mavericks didn't know that Jalen Brunson was
That's another good one. If they had known, but of course, they also traded Luka. So maybe letting go of superstars might just be their thing. Watch out for Cooper Flagg. But to the point, though,
time's limited.
It is a cautionary tale, and I think you've got Rockets fans who look at that and say, hey, I don't want Alperen Şengün or Jalen Green or Amen Thompson to be one of those guys, to be that Tyrese Halliburton or that SGA story where they go off to another place and now they're an MVP candidate or an actual MVP or perennial all-star in the case of Tyrese Halliburton, who's been incredible in these playoffs, by the way. So I think it is an interesting balance, but in terms of like confidence, what do I think? Like, it's clear that the Rockets, like, you just kind of pay attention. Last time we were in here, we talked about, or I mentioned them talking out of both sides, saying, hey, we like continuity, but not continuity for the sake of continuity. And it's got to be something extraordinary to disrupt the continuity, for lack of a better. I think that's, paraphrasing, of course. Well, what's extraordinary? Extraordinary is out there. And Giannis would be that. Like, a guy that has averaged no less than 30 points a game over the last few seasons, and that's after his back-to-back MVP seasons, that to me would count as extraordinary. So it was not surprising to find out right as the season was ending that the Rockets, I think this happened on lottery night, that the Rockets at the same time are interested in Giannis. And Giannis, oh, by the way, is now interested in exploring his options. And so it seems like a natural fit or a perfect fit, I would say. It's just a matter of what you're willing to give up. And who are the Rockets willing to, and also the Bucks, like the, both sides of the coin, who are you willing to part with?
Hey, B. Scott, now that you've seen more of playoff basketball, NBA basketball,
right?
Beyond the first round, the Rockets losing in the first round, how do you feel as a Rockets fan? How do you feel they stack up against what you've seen beyond the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah, so it's funny because they could have easily, I say easily, they didn't do it. But they obviously could have beaten the Golden State Warriors.
Absolutely.
I think they could have given Minnesota a competitive series. Now, after in hindsight, and watching what I've watched, I'd probably give Minnesota the edge there. And they've been one of the better teams, a hot team over the last couple of months or so, one of the hotter teams going into the playoffs. So you got to give them credit for that. But I think it's pretty obvious, the thing that we keep talking about, what are the Rockets lacking? They got all of the tools and all of the ingredients except that one key thing. And you look around, you look at the landscape, the SGAs, the Anthony Edwards, save for the night that he had last night, but you would rather have him than not. Tyrese Halliburton, Jalen Brunson, even these guys, the second guys on these teams, talking about, Karl Anthony Towns, you got another all-star, like bona fide all-star on your team. What Jalen Williams has been for Oklahoma City, right? And you just kind of go down the line. Of course, Julius Randle has been incredible. Supposedly the second guy around, you made the point earlier, he might probably has been their most consistent guy.
Their most consistent.
Yeah, funny enough. And of course, you got the Tyrese Halliburton with Siakam and Miles Turner. So you got to look around and say, hey, do we measure up to that? Do we have guys that we can rely on when the going gets tough at the end of the game?
All right, let's switch things up. Brandon Scott in on his birthday. Send him a happy birthday shout out. I'm seeing some on the text line and YouTube and Twitch. B. Scott, this is not going to get a Marconi Award with this question here, but very simple.
Don't sell yourself short.
Did the Texans have a good offseason?
I would say a simple answer, no.
Really?
I would say no, and here's why. Because I think it's a fine offseason because they didn't necessarily get worse. Here, how about this? I picked them to go 10-7 when the schedule came out. When the schedule came out, right? What did they go last year?
10-7.
What did they go the year before that? 10-7. And so, like, from the standpoint of consistency, I feel like they're about what they've been, for the most part. But they didn't take that step. They didn't take that next step from, you think about it, from year one to year three under D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud. It feels about the same. I'm curious what y'all think. Like, is it greedy to kind of be bored with 10-7 and winning the division and one playoff game? Like, that's pretty cool. That's successful. I don't think anybody could argue with that. But that's about what they feel like. That's what they've been doing. It feels like that's what they're probably going to do this year. I'm a little bit bored with it. I would have liked to have seen them do more or to at least feel a lot better about them going into the season. So from that standpoint, I would say no, even if I don't feel like they took a significant step back.
Yeah, I think it's more than fair. I think it's time for CJ. I think ultimately this is the tell all, the CJ Stroud tell all. I mean, because you look at what they've done, there is a significant amount of pressure on CJ Stroud to make this work.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. if he doesn't, it's not like it's going to be like, oh boy, this that damn Nick Cayley, boy, he I mean, hell, he ain't never done it. So it's not like Nick. I mean, we're talking about C.J. Stroud's been there 2 years. It's his third year. He's supposed to be on the same planet as the best guys in the league. And he's right now self-admittedly getting all the control and getting what he wants, which I think is tremendous, by the way. And I think he'll do fine with it. But the pressure's definitely on C.J. in a big way to make it work.
Well, if Nick Caley is some really good offensive coordinator, then that changes the answer to the question, right? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Even if Nick Caley is just average, if the new system or the change, if you will, unlocks something in CJ or reaches back into something that he had his rookie year and improves him, then the answer is yes, right? If the addition by subtraction on the offensive line, and despite the fact that they don't have stars on the offensive line, but they got a bunch of guys who have played a lot and they're playing on the string and the offensive line play is better, then, of course, the answer to the question definitely changes. But from where we sit right now, it's hard to really envision.
I like your kind of assessment of, was it good? No, because I feel like they're in the same spot of what they've been competing in the last 2 years. There wasn't, because it felt like they were taking a step coming, like this time last year with the moves they made, it felt like they were trying to take a leap. In a step, it doesn't feel that way.
The frustrating part is you look at the two big issues, obviously the O-line issues, and you go, okay, did you go out and did you for sure get better? No. You look at what really happened late in the season where just Nico Collins wasn't enough of a threat offensively to keep defenses from really making you struggle offensively. The loss of Steph Diggs, the loss of Tank Dell really hurt you offensively. Now what do you got? A bunch of rookies and Christian Kirk, right? Like it's hard to look at what went bad last year and go, boy, they addressed the hell out of it in terms of the offseason. Now I'll say it again, and we'll circle back to this at some point, Ron, but I just believe C.J. Stroud is having more communication, having control is going to absolutely change the game for this offense.
All right, happy birthday, B. Scott. He joins us every Wednesday, 4:40.
Yeah, man.
Every season brings highs.
I'm in my drop top, cruising the streets.
And lows.
No way, because I know one of you two assholes would have done the same thing that I just did.
Are you kidding me?
This trio always has eyes on the market in H-Town. It's time to buy or sell. It's stock up.
The arrow's pointed up.
Stock down.
They're selling, Mortimer.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
That is right, every hump day on Houston's number one afternoon drive sports talk program. That'd be this one, The Drive with Clint Sterner. We're on the show, Hughley. Every week, every Wednesday this time, we do a little stock up, stock down, do our best Jordan Belfort impression for you on something related to these the sports in Houston. Today's edition, today's flavor for stock up, stock down on The Drive is Texans defense. D'Amico's defense specifically for the Houston Texans as we get another day closer to going out there and sweating our asses off for training camp. And let's get this thing rolling. I'm going to go back to my old ways, get the negative out of the way first. And I want to start with you, Ron, the show, Hughley. What is your stock down in terms of the Texans defense as we get another day closer to 2025 football?
So, look, listen, we talked about it a little bit ago. This is a great, it appears that it has the ability to be a great, great defense. So the stock downs are a little bit more difficult. But for me, I would go stock down here, Azeez Alshire.
That's not something Texans fans want to hear.
Well, I also think the Texans fans weren't excited about the last thing they saw from Azeez Alshire when and it was really tough to watch the next two games of Travis Kelce to see him just get shut down the way he did by the Bills and the Eagles, and then him just have a field day in the middle of the field, and a lot of that was against Azeez Alshire. And I got to believe that was running through the mind, Clint, of D'Amico Ryans when he brought in EJ Speed in the thought of, you know, hey, man, we got to have some flexibility there. And as we all know, this is a copycat league, and people saw that Travis Kelce, you know, in his mid to late 30s, was just killing him. And teams are probably going to try to put Azeez Alshire in situations. And I think D'Amico knows teams are going to try to put Azeez Alshire in situations. And I think he is going to try to prevent that to happen. And so I think his snaps may be cut short. And I, as I've said last week, I just can't believe Christian Harris is just about to be sitting on the bench like he was and only playing special teams in the playoffs. So to me, Azeez, one of the great leaders on this team, but I think he may be somebody whose stock is down right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard to think, it's hard to get that visual out of your mind that we last saw Azeez Al-Shaair. And the reality of it is he's a downhill, more physical linebacker, and he's a liability to this defense when you get a tight end and a quarterback that can work the middle of the field and you want to play zone.
You think Sean McVay looking at this?
Yeah. I mean, look, now maybe it's personnel-wise that the Texans have the ability to not do that, but, if it's hard to adjust, you know, mid-drive or play-to-play in critical situations when you got a guy that is just really a duck in any kind of zone coverage if you play it. So D'Amico makes the big bucks for a reason. He's got to try to hide him as much as he can. Or, to your point, he's going to have to share some playing time with a better coverage linebacker, which I would imagine is highly likely.
Tough, but honest. That's Ron the Show Hughley. No Texan fan wanted to hear that. But you're here to give them the truth.
Well, the beautiful thing about it is, T, the honesty, they've very wisely gone out and whether they draft them or they acquire them in free agency, they've got pieces that play a different style.
Yeah. He said, I'm not going to let that happen to me again.
Absolutely.
You are listening to Stock Up, Stock Down right here live on The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Do it every Wednesday around this time. And today's edition of Stocks is the Texans defense in particular. We're on the show. Hughley just gave you Azeez. It's his stock down for the 2025 Texans as it sits. Clint Sterner, over to you. Stock down for you, my friend.
Yeah, this one's pretty easy for me. Jimmy Ward, I think there's several reasons. There you go. The health, since you mentioned it, I'll start there. The health is a real issue. When you're on the field, when he's on the field, he's a great communicator, seems to be a great leader, seems to be a guy that kind of sets the temperature in the room and can be a real source for the players to pull from. Problem is he gets injured, right? And so the health is an issue. Number two, I think the further the Texans are removed from the rebuild, if you will, from D'Amico Ryan's system being new, the further removed they get from day one of that, the less important Jimmy Ward's experience in the system is as it pertains to teaching the defense, leading the defense, communicating the defense, and we're there. And I think it's obvious that we're there because you've got Jimmy Ward, is whether he's healthy or not is irrelevant. He's going to be a depth player on this football team at best. And so I think the stock down, whether it's just Father Time, it's health, or just the fact that they've gone out and acquired players that have taken his spot. Again, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, the Reed kid they drafted. I mean, there's a lot of secondary players that have taken his place and moved ahead of him on the pecking board. So, Jimmy Ward for me.
All right. I'm sorry. On the what?
Pecking board?
I hadn't heard that one.
Pecking order? Maybe. I don't know. How about that?
I like that. I like that.
We got the negatives out of the way. You are listening to Houston's number one afternoon drive sports talk program. That'd be The Drive with Sterner and Hughley every Wednesday around 3:20. We do Stock Up, Stock Down. We're doing Texans defense today. Negatives are gone. Time to focus on the positives for the 2025 Texans. We're on the show. Hughley, what is your stock up for D'Amico's defense?
My stock up is there are a lot of players on this, young players on this defense that we think could rise. Will Anderson, Kamari Lassiter, is, or to name a couple. Kalen Bullock has a chance to have a special season. You could see he wasn't fully grasping everything last year at times, and he was still making big plays for the amount of time he was getting, and he probably had four or five interceptions and others where he almost got picks. Like this looks like he could be, you know, 6-7 picks. He just has a knack to read the ball and get places. And that was last year, Clint, with him not completely knowing exactly where he was going all the time. I think he's got more confidence. He knows the spot is his. I think Kalen Bullock has a chance to be special.
You're getting me football horny, as Clint would say.
That is Stock Up for Ron the Show. Back over to you, Clint Sterner, former NFL quarterback of them Dallas Cowboys. Stock Up for you, Dirty Red.
Well, it's easy for me. I've talked at length about him today and several times over the last couple of weeks since he was drafted, the third-round pick out of USC, the cornerback, Jalen Smith. Not only the fact that you needed depth at the cornerback position, but he also brings depth and potential real playing time at the nickel defender position. So Jalen Smith could be really critical to this team's ability to mix and match coverages and stay out of Davante Adams versus Jalen Petrie with the game on the line type situations. I'm going to go with rookie third round pick out of USC, Jalen Smith. His stock, he hadn't done anything since
God,
he got
you
here.
Love
he
had, this I love kid, him, man.
I love him.
And that was
I love
him. And as we said, that was one where people thought that was a reach in the draft, like by at least a round.
Well, when you talk about a third round pick and that's evaluated by Nick Caserio and more importantly D'Amico Ryans on the defensive side of the football, after what he's done here with Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter and all these guys, man, it's woo.
I can't wait to see where he is on the depth chart. Like is he beat out?
They got him at number two nickel.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wondered, is he get ahead of guys like Ronald Darby by the season starts? Is he ahead of those guys? It'll be interesting to see what they do with him.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.